This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Massachusetts is pushing hard on the renewable energy front, with ambitious goals for solar and offshore wind energy generation and authorization to procure almost 9.5 million megawatt hours of clean energy. As more renewable energy comes online, though, it poses a challenge, since there's no sunshine at night or on rainy days, and wind energy, of course, doesn't come on a prearranged schedule. We need the ability to store energy for later use. Massachusetts has set a goal of 200 megawatt hours of storage capacity by 2020 and is incentivizing energy storage projects. Batteries are just one of the options. Joining me now to discuss where energy storage technology stands and where it's headed is Galen Nelson. He's the Senior Director of Innovation and Industry Support at the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center. Also, Rupp Caravo. He is the Director of the Environmental Energy Institute and Co-Director of the Turbulence and Energy Lab at the University of Windsor. He just chaired an offshore energy and storage conference right here on Cape Cod. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's this dogma that more renewable energy means we need more energy storage. Rupp, could you just kind of address that idea? Why is it that we need energy storage?
Yeah, the dogma is there because people would see the wind turbine stop spinning, or they would recognize clouds over solar panels and say, well, how are we going to fill these gaps? Without really having an in-depth knowledge of how the grid works, the grid is quite dynamic in handling those things, but there are limits. And so eventually what happens is the more intermittency you have on the grid, the more you need to increase grid flexibility. And grid flexibility comes from a few things. It comes from efficient interties with neighboring grids. It comes from managing your loads properly. But also you can extend your flexibility and really enhance the nimbleness of the grid by this business of energy storage, so that when you have excesses that you can't deal with anymore, you can dump them into a battery. And a battery can be an electrochemical battery, it can be a pneumatic battery, you can blow up an air balloon, you can make ice, whatever it is, and then you can recover that energy at a time of your choosing. So it's the idea that you can make something intermittent dispatchable. So energy storage is an important piece to building grid flexibility and making the grid more adaptable for the future.
Galen, in terms of the goals that Massachusetts has set, 200 megawatt hours of storage sounds not very big compared to big numbers like 9.5 million megawatt hours of clean energy or 1,600 megawatts of offshore wind, the kind of numbers that we've heard thrown around in the past year in terms of energy generation. Is it enough? I mean, how much energy storage do we need?
Well, we actually conducted a study, State of Charge, in partnership with our sister agency, the Department of Energy Resources, and we found that we could achieve 600 megawatts of energy storage with a series of policy levers through 2025. Now, this 200 megawatt hour target, it's important to think about the timeline here, is just through 2020, which is really right around the corner. So it's a good target. It will get us on track. It's important to note that the industry is just emerging here in Massachusetts. And while the technologies are proven, or many storage technologies are commercially viable, what remains to be proven and demonstrated are the business use cases and the so-called stacking of the different revenue streams and related benefits. And that's why we've invested $10 million in energy storage demonstration projects to kickstart this effort to get us to that 200 megawatt hour target by 2020.
Well, you say that the technology is proven. Of course, the most proven energy storage technology is batteries. It's, you know, tempting to say, oh, well, why don't we just scale up kind of the household batteries that we're already using? But Bill Gates, in a piece last year for his newsletter, laid this out pretty clearly, said basically to store enough energy for one household, average household, for a week, you would need a 2-ton lithium-ion battery. Now, the price of batteries is coming down, but do we have new battery technologies that are going to shrink the size, make these batteries more efficient, and actually something that could be feasibly used on the scale of an entire electricity grid?
The answer to that question is the technology is evolving. The costs are certainly coming down. The energy density is improving. The entrepreneurs in Massachusetts and around the country and indeed around the globe are exploring new battery technologies, and of course electrochemical energy storage is only one of four or five different buckets, if you will, of energy storage typologies, including mechanical storage such as flywheels, pumped hydro, and there are other approaches to storing energy. So I think we'll continue to see those round-trip efficiencies improve, energy densities improve, and costs come down. I also don't think that we need to be thinking about deploying batteries only in homes, and that we'll probably deploy batteries in a range of settings, certainly some in individual buildings, but also at the distribution level and at the transmission level.
If you had to rank the technologies that are currently available that you say are already proven and available for commercial scale deployment, maybe some of the technologies that are in these pilot projects that have been funded here in Massachusetts, what are some of the most promising technologies?
Well, I think there's no doubt that lithium ion leads the way in the electrochemical bucket. I believe the latest figures show that it captures about 95% of the energy storage market in the United States. But certainly we're seeing flow batteries gaining traction. I think ultimately we'll see more flywheels. We might see more pumped hydro. And we may see, yet again, emerging electrochemical approaches as well as other mechanical approaches to energy storage.
You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. I'm talking with Galen Nelson of Massachusetts Clean Energy Center and Rupp Caravo of the University of Windsor about energy storage technology. Rupp, the landscape, excuse the pun here, I guess, is very different when you go offshore in terms of offshore energy generation. Batteries may be not the leading idea. And one thing that was really featured at this conference you've just come from and is also something that you've worked on is the idea of using compressed air to store energy underwater. How does that work?
Yeah, as Galen mentioned, it is a mosaic of solutions that I think is going to be what we see in the future. All shapes and sizes of technology are going to be engaged, and offshore in particular lends itself well to this business of taking excess electricity electricity that you plan to store to run something like an electric air compressor. So that air compressor then can basically run air into an underwater bladder, basically a balloon, let's say at the bottom of the ocean, and all of that weight of the water helps to keep that air at pressure. And then you basically cap it and for later. And then when you want the energy back, you simply open a valve on shore or, on the floating device on top of the facility. And the weight of the ocean pushes that air back out. And when it comes back out through the pipe, it spins a turbine that's coupled to a generator and you get the electricity back.
I love this mental image of a balloon because I'm imagining when you've blown up, you know, like a kid's balloon and you let it go and it goes flying around.
Yeah.
The room, that's the energy that you're getting back from that.
It is. In the next time you're in a pool, try to take a balloon to the bottom with you and try and blow it up down there. It's staggering how difficult it is. And that's really the beauty of this is that the deeper you go, the more energy you can put into the same size bag.
Is that a technology that is anywhere close to commercial scale deployment? We've already got plenty of wind farms offshore in Europe, at least. Is this something that's being used?
Yeah. There's a company called Hydrostore in Canada that we worked with to commercialize this technology. So Hydrostore has a facility that they operate with Toronto Hydro on Toronto Island right now that is grid connected.
Galen, compressed air is not quite as widely feasible on land because you would need large areas to fill with compressed air. There's an example down south where there's a mine using it. But here in Massachusetts, we do have one example of doing something similar but a little different, and that's pumping water and then retrieving that energy at a different time. Can you describe, there's a pumped hydro project here in Massachusetts. Can you describe that?
Sure, and it's been around for quite a while. It's located in Northfield, Massachusetts, in north central Massachusetts. And as you described, it draws water from the Connecticut River, pumps it up when energy costs are low, typically at night, into a reservoir at the top of a small mountain. And then when the grid operators at ISO New England need additional capacity, or if, say, for example, a a major power generator were to trip off for one reason or another, or there was some kind of a disturbance on the grid, a cyber attack, a transmission line coming down, that water could flow down through the same turbines used to get water into the reservoir and a bit of energy pretty quickly. And then, of course, that water flows back into the Connecticut River.
We've been talking about what are collectively referred to as hard storage, where you've got some physical dedicated storage device. Some people have actually compared it to like the hard drive of the energy grid. But there's another idea out there, and that's virtual storage, the idea that we could use like, buildings or even the grid itself and just kind of moving energy around as an energy storage solution. Rupp, this is something you seem to kind of be referring to at the beginning of our conversation. How much a piece of the puzzle could virtual storage be versus this hard storage?
I think it's very important, particularly at regional levels, at least coming from the market that I'm most familiar with in Ontario. That market is trying to improve interties to neighboring grids. It helps from a reliability standpoint, but also in an operational way. The National Resources Canada Laboratory just finished a massive pan-Canadian wind integration study, which also engaged the National Renewable Energy Lab here in Golden. And they looked at how massively grid flexibility could be improved by simply improving this ability to move power around at will a little more nimbly. And so what you're talking about, I think, is going to go a long way to helping us make the grid more resilient and more economical in the future.
Galen, at the Massachusetts level, there's been a lot of progress on building efficiency, but smart grid innovation is one area where analysts and critics have said Massachusetts and New England as a whole could use some work. Is this an area that's getting more focus?
It is, and I think that's a fair criticism. There's certainly no doubt that the state has a nation-leading track record on energy efficiency, but we do have a wonderful opportunity, I believe, to invest more resources in smart buildings, smart grid, microgrids, and storage will no doubt play a role in that smart grid future, again, whether it's at the building level, the distribution level, or even at the transmission level.
I want to give a nod to a piece that showed up in the New York Times last week. It was a really short, interactive piece that just gave readers four options for actions or technologies that might do the most to help address our energy challenges. It was things like build more wind farms or eat less meat. And one of them was change air conditioning. And that ended up being the right answer because air conditioning in places like here in the Northeast is the leading cause of peak power demand spikes during the summer. But then also it could be potentially part of the solution. We've got a pilot project that's one of the ones funded here in Massachusetts for something called thermal energy storage, where you would use excess energy at off-peak times to create ice and then basically blow fans across that ice during peak power times to use that to cool buildings. It seems like actually a pretty low-tech idea. And I'm wondering if each of you see these kinds of low-tech efficiencies, just kind of thinking about things a little bit differently, but not necessarily needing a whole new class of sophisticated technology. Are there those kinds of things on the horizon for energy storage?
Well, I think so. I think the fact that we're having this conversation is a sign that the most important part of this solution is awareness and public awareness, and I think that's coming. And I think the realizations that you've talked about are what's going to drive these solutions. It won't be one thing by itself, though. I will say this because energy comes in many shapes and forms, and it's an intricate cascade of scales. And so the solutions also will have to be multi-scalar. But I think the fact that people are thinking more about it, both behind the meter and in front of the meter, I think it's going to really help us move faster than we have in the past.
Galen, I'll give you the last word here. Would you agree with that assessment of where we're headed with energy storage?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I'm glad that you highlighted thermal storage. Absolutely, there are opportunities there at different scales. There are companies that are producing cooling units at the residential scale that make ice at night, again, from generally low-cost, generally cleaner power, and then deploy that to cool those same buildings during the day. And in larger scales, whether it's the Princeton microgrid or several towers in New York or the Moakley Courthouse in Boston that are making large amounts of ice, again, at night with lower cost, cleaner power, and then using that ice to cool those buildings during the day when power is much more expensive and typically dirtier, those absolutely can be part of the solution and will absolutely help accelerate storage deployment because, as you note, they are lower tech than some of these emerging electrochemical storage solutions.
That's Galen Nelson. He's Senior Director of Innovation and Industry Support at Massachusetts Clean Energy Center. Also, Rupp Caravo. He is the Associate Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of Windsor. Thank you so much to both of you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
I'm Heather Goldstone. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.